Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. I want to thank you for listening to this podcast from Connecting Faith. There are many more podcasts available at our website, myfaithradio.com. And your support makes this possible.
Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting Faith with Life.
Hi, welcome to Connecting Faith. Thanks so much for tuning in. I'm Neil Stavem, Ted Ross at the controls. And Ted, we're going to have a great hour today. It's hopefully an hour that will be encouraging for a lot of folks.
Power of music,
yeah.
And an incredible story to share, too.
That's right. Coming up in the second half hour, we're going to hear the story about a mother whose 23-year-old daughter had a terminal illness, diagnosed with terminal illness. And during those last few months that they had together, they shared a lot of life, and we're going to hear that story. It's a powerful interview. But before we get to that, we're going to talk about music and how music has been used of God so powerfully with those that are going through difficulties of, in a variety of ways. And we're going to meet in just a moment our guest, who is an award-winning musician. He's an accomplished songwriter and music producer, written over 500 songs, recorded in the Christian pop and country markets, has recorded songs recorded by the likes of Point of Grace, Avalon, Clay Cross, B.B. Winans, Bob Carlisle, many others, and the Dove Award-winning. And we're going to meet Steve Seiler with Music for the Soul in just a minute, but I thought you might want to hear one of those award-winning songs right now.
So I will follow Christ. I will run the
Clay Cross, Bob Carlisle, B.B. Winans. That was the inspirational song of the year in 2000, and that was just one of several Dove Awards that my guest Steve Seiler has won for his writing. Steve is the founder and director of Music for the Soul. It's a multi-award-winning Christian music ministry creating unique song, spoken word, and video recordings bringing hope and healing to issues of deep pain. And Steve, welcome, first of all, to Connecting Faith.
Thank you so much for having me today, Neil.
Steve, is this, that song, I Will Follow Christ, that was an amazing, a powerful ballad when it came out, 16 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Did that represent kind of what your heart was all about? Because I know kind of in your story, you were like a lot of aspiring writers. You wanted to get that number one song written.
Well, yes, I started out wanting to be, a pop star and writing songs for myself. And then when I decided that wasn't the path, I began to try to write songs for other artists, for pop artists. And actually, it was when I had my first hit on pop radio that I realized that wasn't the path either. It was one of those moments, one of those "is that all there is" moments when I heard the song on the radio and just realized almost instantly that was not what God wanted for me. And that actually was what led me to ask God, to seek God for what my calling was and how I was to use music. And that's really was the beginning of my interest in writing Christian songs.
Because obviously you had a gift, you still do. I mean, you were just saying before the show, you wrote a song yesterday, right? So it's what you do, right?
That's right. If you're a songwriter, you kind of can't help it.
Yeah. So how did your life change when you kind of made that commitment? Say, pop songs are fine, country songs are fine, but I want to do something that really has lasting value and meaning. How did things turn for you at that point?
It's amazing. As soon as I committed to the Lord that's what I wanted to do, kind of a mission statement emerged that my songs were going to share the compassion of Christ with the world. I got a call just in a matter of a few days from a total stranger asking me to work on a project for young women who'd been sexually abused. He licensed a book by a couple of Christian authors and wanted me to write some songs so that we could create a stage play. And so, I mean, it was like the minute I made that decision and told God that I wanted to follow his leading with my music, the doors just started swinging open, and it was very, very clear that God was calling me.
So is what's unique about maybe music in the first place, you know, is it something that just, you know, the lyric can speak more than maybe the spoken word or even maybe a verse of scripture?
Well, the interesting thing is music speaks to both hemispheres of the brain. That's because the language is processed primarily in the left hemisphere of the brain, whereas melody is processed primarily in the right hemisphere of the brain. So when people talk about a song touching mind and heart, that's really what they're referring to, because a song is kind of an all skate. It gets all of the brain involved. And with lyrics, you also have the melody piece and the lyric piece combined to create a memory device. So if I sing something to you, the studies show that you're 9 times likelier to remember what is sung to you than what is spoken to you. Now, reading does a little bit better. A song is about twice as good as reading for retention. But it's just that God has wired us to be responsive to music.
So you had that opportunity to write a song for someone that had been abused.
Mm-hmm.
You know, suddenly you're writing songs that, you know, you have a number of, 11 or so albums in this Music for the Soul, I guess, series. Is that what you'd call it? Or is there more than that?
Yes. Well, there's 12 full-length projects now, each one dealing with a different topic, and then we have several single songs as well. But what we try to do is engage with a topic. You know, I don't believe people will trust you with their hope unless they believe that you understand their pain. So our projects start in the pain so that the person listening feels known and understood. And then we move through the steps of healing with the idea being that people are set free with the hope of Christ at the end of the project.
So I guess the question is, you know, does it help that a song addresses, you know, something specific? I mean, like eating disorders or cancer or the loss through suicide. I mean, is it important to be specific?
I think it is because people around these issues, they feel like they're the only one. It's very typical for somebody to think nobody's ever been as bad as me. Nobody's ever had the kind of shame or guilt or pain that I'm feeling. So people feel isolated, and when we are isolated, we can feel shamed. And so when somebody hears a song and it's speaking their truth, it's like, oh my gosh, if there's a song about this, then how could I be the only one who's ever felt this way? And I think that knowing, that feeling known and understood by God and by other people is the beginning of realizing that we're part of a community of faith, that others can walk with us, that there's hope, that there can be freedom, and that most importantly, that God understands and that, you know, is right there with us in whatever we're going through.
Well, Steve, we're going to hear songs as we go along here this half hour, but maybe just set up one that we'll highlight a couple. But one of them is called "Innocent Child," so we'll say that hear that going into break. But just tell us a little bit about that song and what you're hoping to bring encouragement through that.
Well, one of the things that sexual abuse survivors tend to believe is that it was their fault. And so one of the key things that I wanted to convey in writing this song was that they are an innocent child, that what was done to them was not their fault, that they are still beloved of God, and that they are not responsible for what happened to them.
So you obviously need to do maybe a bit of research on you know, whether it's suicide or pornography or cancer, any of those things, right?
Yes, we spend much more time researching than we do actually writing. There's a year or two of research in front of every recording that we do. Right now, we've just completed 2 years of research on the issue of recovery from having remorse over an abortion in one's past. Each of these issues have a lot of nuance to them, and we spend a lot of time speaking with people who've been through the issue, a lot of time speaking with therapists who counsel on it, and they're the ones who ultimately say, yes, that lyric is exactly right, that's how it feels, because we realize we could do more harm than good if we don't have that kind of input, and obviously what we want to do is extend truth and hope to people. That's real.
It's Music for the Soul. What's the website people want to find out more?
musicforthesoul.org.
All right. Let's hear a little bit of Innocent Child, and then we'll come back, talk more with Steve Seiler, founder, director, and producer of Music for the Soul. You can check it out at musicforthesoul.org.
It's not your fault. You are an innocent child. It's not your fault. You are an innocent child. Precious one, I know the nightmares you've had. Don't be ashamed. You didn't do anything bad. You only wanted approval. Every child needs love. You are a perfect creation of the Holy One. It's not nothing is in vain. Nothing. Let me say it again and again and again. Nothing is in vain.
There's a unique ministry, a unique music ministry that is bringing hope and encouragement to thousands of people around the globe. Steve Seiler is the founder and director of Music for the Soul. It's a multi-award-winning Christian music ministry creating unique songs, spoken word, and video recordings bringing hope and healing to issues of deep pain. It's Somebody's Daughter, focusing on pornography, More Beautiful, breast cancer, Chaos of the Heart, on suicide grief. Just a few of the highly acclaimed recordings that Steve has produced. And latest one is Dignity and Caregiving. And as you mentioned, you're just working on one that deals with those who experienced abortion in their past. It's musicforthesoul.org. Steve is a accomplished singer, songwriter, music producer, and we just heard a little bit of one of his tunes called Nothing Is in Vain. It's is the album Broken to Bless. I think that's the we're going to hear that song in a moment, but say more about that. I mean, did this come out of your personal experience? I mean, in terms of maybe sorrow, have you— is that maybe why it seems this is such a passion for you, because you've gone through some difficulties yourself?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I have had, by any standard, a very, very blessed life. I do what I love for a living. I'm blessed to have a happy marriage and two great kids, and my parents were married for 60 years. So there's not a whole lot I could complain about, but I have had the privilege of walking with a lot of people through some very difficult times. And then later in life, I have had some pretty devastating things happen to people I love. I think none of us gets out, you know, without being banged up a little bit. And that's really what Broken to Bless is about. I think, you know, as Christians, we all want to be more like Jesus. That's our goal, is to be refined and to become more like Christ. And I think sometimes we tend to err on the side of thinking that means we need to be more perfect, when actually I think, you know, as Jesus was on the cross and was broken for us, I think sometimes it's when we allow the things that have hurt us, you know, our vulnerabilities, to be used to help other people, to be willing to realize that brokenness can be something that can serve and bless someone else. And so that's really what the whole Broken to Bless album is about, just this idea that in the ways we've been wounded is the way that we can be there with love for other folks.
Let's hear just a little bit of Broken to Bless.
Because I've been broken, how deeply I can bless. Compassion's been forged in the fires of duress, as Jesus did for me.
We don't really have time to play all the great songs off of that. And there's 12 full-length projects, plus a number of other singles as well. But Steve, just maybe say a word or two about some people that have particularly been encouraged by your songs, how it is. I'm sure you hear feedback, and that's got to be encouraging to you.
Yes, I mean, you know, that's what keeps us going, actually, because this is hard work. But, you know, a wonderful example, I think. We were in our office, and there was a knock at the door, and a lady came in, and she had been a single mom, and her son had committed suicide. And someone had given her a copy of our project, Chaos of the Heart. And on that project, there's a song that where the person expresses their anger at God, and the person who committed suicide for what happened, and how could you let this happen? The song is called How Could You. She came in and told us that she had lost her faith because of her son's suicide, but that when she heard that song and she realized it was okay for her to be angry at God and to express that, she said that she started screaming at God, and she said, literally, you gave me back prayer, and I've regained my faith. And it's a little rocky right now, but at least God and I are talking. And I thought, wow, the power of a song to actually be a part of restoring somebody's faith in a difficult time, that humbles me every day.
Yeah. As you said, you have, 12 full projects, and so Are there areas of sort of the more you do, the more you realize that, oh, there's a lot of need here, and, you know, we need songs to address that?
Yes, and, you know, I don't think I have enough life left to do all the topics we've identified. What I try to do is I try to look for areas where I feel like maybe folks are underserved a little bit. That's one of the reasons we're doing the project for folks who have experienced abortion, because while there's a lot of talk about the issue, you know, the media and politically and stuff, there isn't a lot out there for healing folks who need to know that God still loves them and that they can be forgiven and their lives can move forward and they can have a life after that. So we're always looking for ways to encourage people in really difficult situations that they are still God's beloved children.
So musicforthesoul.org, if people want to, they can get the CDs. You also do some video things too, right?
Yes, the Somebody's Daughter piece is an award-winning DVD. There's a DVD with More Beautiful, the Breast Cancer piece. Many of our pieces have discussion guides so that you can use them in retreats or Sunday school classes, groups, things like that. So, yes, all of that material is there, and people can stream songs, download songs, or if they want, they can get physical product as well.
I'm wondering, you know, just out of this, how has the experience of sort of walking alongside those that are suffering maybe changed you in terms of your maybe compassion and caring?
Oh, my gosh, yes. I think the thing that anybody in ministry will tell you is that they start a ministry thinking they're going to, you know, change other people's lives, and then the person who's changed the most is themselves. I mean, it is such a it's rewarding, it's challenging, it's daunting, it's a privilege. It's sacred ground every day, and I'm very grateful for all the lives and all the courage that I've seen in working with folks around these difficult issues.
Steve Seiler is the founder, director, and producer of Music for the Soul. You can find out more at musicforthesoul.org, a number of full-length projects dealing with issues of, you know, whether it's cancer or abuse or suicide, any number of things. You'll find, I don't know, maybe just run down you remember the list of the topics that you address?
Well, I haven't heard you mention our project for folks who have special needs kids. I have a special needs son, so that's very dear to me. We did the most recent release was Before Broken to Bless was a full-length project for those who are grieving the loss of a loved one, and it actually comes in a sympathy card, a really beautiful sympathy card. We did something for police officers to honor police officers. It's called Heroes Unsung. And I always say that everybody who's married is having a challenging time staying married. So we did a project called 50 Years From Now to encourage and strengthen marriages.
One of the projects that you were part of here a few years back is called David, Ordinary Man, Extraordinary God. And that had some wonderful pieces on it. I thought we'd just play a little bit of one from there. It's not part of the Music for the Soul necessarily, but it's a wonderful reminder from Psalm 139.
I cannot hide from you. You know me all too well. There's no story of mine.
a memory could not tell. I can ride the morning wings till I'm completely out of view. Whether in dark or light, I cannot hide from you.
Greg Long. It was from a wonderful project called David, Ordinary Man, Extraordinary God. And Steve Siler is one of the key writers and developers of that. Steve, I know one of your, we got a couple minutes before you have to go, and we're going to play another song that you've written just after the break. And I'm wondering if you can maybe set up not too far from here. And if there's anything more you want to say about the David project, that was a great release.
Oh, David was a tremendous experience for all of us. Such a rich collection of stories and material to work from. It, you know, when you're co-writing with scripture, yeah. It makes things a lot easier. the Not Too Far From Here song, that's an important song in my life. It's been recorded twice, the music for the Soul catalog. But Kim Boyce was the first to record it. When we were writing that song, really, I saw it as a prayer. And I remember that my co-writer Ty Lacey brought the first verse and some music over to the house, and then he had to leave. And so I was going to finish it up. And I say this a lot. Often I find the best lyrics are closer to the ground. I remember laying on the floor in my office with the lyric pad in front of me and just saying, Lord, this is just a prayer. I just want this to be a prayer for people. And we wrote the song. It was recorded almost immediately after it was written. And then it wound up getting connected to the Murrah Federal bombing in Oklahoma City, when a little girl who went to the church closest to the bomb site actually sang the song, and the McNeil Lair News Hour picked it up. And then Michael Crawford, the Phantom of the Opera guy, picked it up after that. So the song just has taken on a life of its own and has been all around the world, and such a blessing to me. But, you know, just a very simple message that Jesus is as close as the next person to us, with, you know, the opportunity for us to serve, and that Christ himself is always with us in spirit.
Which is really kind of at the heart of Music for the Soul, isn't it? That, I mean, the bottom line is that we are not alone.
Yes, that's exactly right.
Steve, blessings to you. Good to connect with you once again. Steve Siler, founder and director of Music for the Soul. And you can find out more about their great work at the website musicforthesoul.org. Steve, we look forward to you continue to write and to minister in this really important and unique market. So thanks for using your gifts in this way.
Well, thank you so much, Neil. God bless.
Steve Siler joining us this afternoon here on Connecting Faith. Now, coming up right after this quick break, we're going to hear Kim Boyce singing Not Too Far From Here. That was one of my favorite songs. And we'll use that to set up a conversation that Jen Green from our Faith Radio Network had with Elaine Marie Cooper, a story about Bethany's calendar when God has other plans. We'll hear that story coming up. We're 31 and a half past the hour here on Connecting Faith. Coming up in a moment, we're going to hear the story of fear and faith, Elaine Marie Cooper's world turned upside down in January of 2002. One minute, her 23-year-old daughter Bethany seemed fine, happy, brilliant young woman on the verge of a new career. And the next, she was strapped to a gurney in a local emergency room, diagnosed with a terminal brain tumor. And out of that came several months of challenging time, and Elaine will tell us her story in just a few minutes. But first, as promised, Steve Siler's award-winning song recorded by Kim Boyce. I hope it encourages you and maybe sets up our conversation to come. It's called Not Too Far From Here.
Somebody's down to their last time. Somebody's running out. Somebody's got nowhere else to go. Somebody needs a little hope. Not too far from here. And I may not know their name, but I'm feeling just the same, that you'll use me, Lord, to wipe away
Somebody's troubled and confused. Somebody's got nothing left to lose. Not too far from here. Somebody's forgotten.
Not Too Far From Here, a song from Kim Boyce, written by Steve Seiler, and it sets up our conversation ahead, which will be conducted by Jen Green, who was delivered from Cubicle World 13 years ago. She got her first taste of radio and has never looked back. She's a wife and a mom and is a morning show host in Northwestern Media in Des Moines, and she tells us Bethany's calendar.
Identifying with Christ and being his child can bring so much joy to our lives. However, in the midst of that joy, we still suffer periods of intense grief, and there's perhaps no grief as intense as that of a parent who's the caregiver to a child who's been given a very grim prognosis, like cancer. Author Elaine Cooper takes us on a very bittersweet journey of doing just that, loving and caring for her daughter, Bethany, during her battle with terminal brain cancer. Yet, when you read her new book, Bethany's Calendar, you come away with a feeling of hope renewed. So thanks very much for being with us, Elaine.
Thank you for having me here, Jen.
And why do you think that is? That even though you've written a really open and really honest book and a discussion of your daughter's sickness and her eventual passing, it's still really a story of hope.
Well, because my daughter Bethany kept her faith so strong, and she also shared that faith with others, and she reminded me every day that life is short for all of us, but eternity is forever, and in that there is incredible hope.
Well, this might seem like a rabbit trail, but I promise it's going to bring me to an important point, believe me. We recently celebrated the holidays, and I know that you and your husband Steve have a really unique Christmas Eve ritual that you've done ever since Bethany left us. Can you tell us about it?
Sure. Right after Bethany died, it was 2 months later, was the first Christmas without her. And we were trying to come up with a way to honor her memory. And somehow we thought of the idea of bringing stuffed animals to the adult oncology patients at the hospital. And most people think that it's only children who need stuffed animals. But when people are very ill, they really crave a comfort item. Mm-hmm. And a stuffed animal is about the most comfortable thing that you can give to a person who's not feeling well. And so we kind of made that our tradition. I think we missed 1 year when we were out of state. But each year we go to Toys R Us and gather up a whole bunch of stuffed animals, and we bring a bag from home so that we can keep them as clean as possible mm-hmm. because many of the cancer patients have been on chemo. So we gather up, and usually I start the day by calling the oncology unit, and I ask them how many patients they think will be there for Christmas Eve. And it used to be that there were less than 20, but in the last couple of years, there's been more than 20 each time, which is really sad because Christmas Eve is a time when people want to be home. So we bring stuffed animals to the patients there, and we don't hand them out because I want to respect their privacy, but the staff hands them out and brings them just a token of love, and we call it a Bethany blessing.
Aww. What a great idea. And that brings me to a really important point of your book, Bethany's Calendar. It's not just your story. It's also kind of a practical how-to, not only for caregivers, but for those of us who have never gone through what you've gone through, but know people who either have or are going through it. And it helps us know, your book helps us know what to do, how to help, how to be a supportive part of their lives. Why did you write a book like that?
Well, because I realized that when you're going through a situation like that where suddenly you're in the position of being a caregiver and you're at home and you're so overwhelmed with your own fears and concern and your own grief that you don't even know what to ask for. Mm. And other people will come up to you at church or other places and say, "What can I do to help you?" And you don't know what to say and they don't know what to do. Mm. So I thought the best thing is to think about after 10, 11 years, think about ways that they could have helped us, things that might have been a practical help during that time, and kind of just jot little ideas in the book of ways that people could help a family going through such a situation.
Well, right. At the end of every chapter mm-hmm. of your book, you have a note to yourself.
Right.
And I think that's probably you just kind of reminiscing back mm-hmm. what you went through. But then you have a note to others.
Right.
And it's simple things like when somebody is going through this, you can bring meals.
Right.
You can offer hope. Come mm-hmm. up. Sometimes you just need to listen. Mm-hmm. And you place those throughout your book as a really helpful, practical guide for people to be able to help others.
Right, right. I remember one of the ones that I wanted to impress upon there was that one time I had two friends come over. Because I think when someone is ill in the home and perhaps even dying, people are uncomfortable being around that. And they're not quite sure how to handle it or if they can handle it themselves if they're covering well, let's say someone goes to the store or something mm-hmm. like that. So if you go as a duet, they can be there to support each other as well as to support the caregiver
wow.
and the person who is ill, because it's a little easier doing it with a friend than just doing it by yourself.
Well, you know, they say that women like to go to the restroom in pairs. So
it's
if
true.
You're going to go and you're going to be supportive to somebody who's going through this, you can go as a pair and
exactly.
kind of draw strength off of each other. Really great practical things that you put in this book, mm-hmm. besides, of course, the beautiful story of your daughter. Now, you can't talk with a mom who's written a book about her daughter without asking the mom to tell us about her. So why don't you tell us a little bit about Bethany?
You bet. What everyone seems to remember about Bethany is her laugh and her sense of humor. And actually, some of the things that make us laugh the most were things we didn't even find out about until the memorial service, when some of her friends, especially from college, would give us such incidents as when they were in college, she would call the security people at the college campus and claim to be a student stuck in a dryer on the campus and that she couldn't get out. And she would be so convincing that the security people would actually go and check to try to rescue the student. And she was the ultimate prankster.
Oh, no.
Which, of course, makes a parent both laugh and makes them devastated, too. Like, I can't believe my daughter did this. But she was always really good at just silly things. She would love to imitate Tevye in Fiddler on the Roof singing If I Were a Rich Man.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just her laugh, her sense of humor, her ability to see humor in different situations is something that I think people just prize in their memory of Bethany.
Well, that sense of humor, you know, you talk about that. You have a good sense of humor. Bethany had a good sense mm-hmm. of humor. I think that's God-given.
Because I agree.
There were times during this journey where you really needed some comic relief. You
yep.
really needed to laugh. And you tell us about those in the book.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I kind of intersperse them there. And humor is truly a gift from God. And we had one time when my mom, who was very, very proper and She was reading a book to Bethany. It was one of James Herriot's books, and he got very gritty in his details sometimes about farm life and farm animals. And my mom wanted to read this chapter to her, and they're talking about, you know, cow anatomy in such a way that was extremely, shall we say, graphic.
Yeah, well, it was very about graphic. Artificial insemination, right?
Exactly.
Let's just be real.
Artificial insemination. And so my mother, who was so proper, she was reading this book, and I'm over in the corner crocheting, trying so hard not to laugh. And I'm looking at Bethany, and she's starting to laugh, and my husband's over in the other corner trying not to laugh. And finally, my mother just puts the book on her lap, and she goes, "Really?" And we burst out laughing. And I said, "Mom, do you want me to take over?" And she says, "No, I'll get through this."
What a gift.
And we laughed so hard, and I still laugh thinking about it, obviously.
We're talking with Elaine Cooper, author of Bethany's Calendar.
Bethany's Calendar, When God Had Other Plans. Elaine Marie Cooper sharing her story. Jen Green from Northwestern Media is talking with her. We're going to hear more in just a minute. Stay tuned.
With Elaine Cooper, author of Bethany's Calendar, When God Has Other Plans. Grief is unfortunately a part of life. And even as Christians, it's something that we have to learn to deal with graciously because it's certainly not innate.
No.
Although when I read your book, there are times when the graciousness that God gave you to deal with this certainly comes out. But there's other times where you're very human and you're very honest about some of the things that happened to you while you were reading it. I hope you don't mind. When I read the book, there were actually times where I laughed out loud through my tears. Laughter through tears is one of my favorite emotions. You specifically mentioned DWWs, and that one made me laugh out loud. Tell us about that.
I'm glad it did. Yes, I decided that I was very relieved that the police officers in our town did not pull me over for a DWW, meaning driving while wailing, because I so often would save those tears. I didn't always want to cry in front of my daughter or others who were helping us out. But my moment to have release was when I would drive somewhere by myself and I would just start to wail and cry in the car. And you know, I was just talking with Jen a minute ago about how we think we're so private in our car and no one can see us. You know, even with sunglasses on, I'm sure they can see your makeup smears coming down your cheeks.
Exactly.
But that was my point where I just had to release the grief that was built up. And everyone needs a place to be able to release that grief. You can't just hold it in forever. We are human. God made us with emotions, and we have to release those emotions in an appropriate way.
You're not just an author.
Nope.
You are a mom.
Yes.
You are a mom.
I am a mom.
And you're a grandmom.
I'm a grandmom now. Yes.
You don't look like you could be a grandmom, but you're a grandmom.
Well, thank you.
So you are a mom. You're an author. Before that, though, and even during that, while you're doing this, you were a nurse.
Yes.
So some people would think that you were uniquely qualified to be able to take care of her. But still, was there something in your life that happened that helped to prepare you for not only Bethany's battle, but the end of her battle with cancer?
Yes, there were several things really that I can think of. I remember when I was years ago when I lived in Boston, I was in the hospital recovering from surgery. And I remember one of the techs saying, "Would you want to rock this baby? The baby has to have surgery and she can't have any food right now." And I said, "Sure, I can do that." And I asked what was wrong with the baby. And the woman says, "Well, she has a brain tumor."
Oh, my.
And I remember being so shocked and horrified that this tiny little precious baby had a brain tumor. And I remember rocking her and soothing her and comforting her and thinking how awful this was. But, you know, I look back on that after my daughter was diagnosed and I thought, what an amazing thing that God put that in my life early on as a young girl. And I think about things like that often. Also, when just before Bethany died, the hospice nurse, I think it was, gave me a book that talked about near-death experiences. Mm-hmm. And so I was reading about people who sometimes see individuals who maybe have already passed on into eternity. And I remembered reading years ago about an incident with Billy Graham where he was talking about being with his grandmother when she passed away. Now, his grandfather, who was married to his grandmother, had long since gone into eternity, and he had been a Civil War veteran who had lost a leg and an eye. And when he was with his grandmother, she said, all of a sudden she called out to her husband, and she said, "There's Ben." That was her husband. She says, "There's Ben, and he's got two eyes and two legs." Aww. And then she laid back, and she passed away. And I thought, isn't that amazing? And I thought, you know, those kinds of things that come back to your mind, and you see how God has brought you through different instances, different experiences in your life, different things you may have read that kind of are there for you at such a moment in time and kind of help you as you're going through things that, like, for instance, when Bethany was near death, she was starting to see people that were there. And I know that some people tend to attribute that to drugs and to hallucinations and things like that. But we have a great God who talks in his word about the things that are not seen. Mm-hmm. And there's a whole spiritual side of things that is around us all the time that we never see. But when somebody is getting ready to go into eternity, they seem to see some things that we who are not on the edge cannot see. So it was an amazing, amazing time. And I look back at some of those experiences and I say, God, you're gracious and you've prepared me all along for something that I didn't know I was going to go through.
Words really can't do justice to what you and your husband Steve went through, or what Bethany went through,
right,
or your sons Ben and Nate.
Right.
I've never experienced it. I can read it. I could weep with mm-hmm. you, laugh with you. Mm-hmm. I could sit here and talk with you. The anguish, you know, it's 10 years later.
Sure.
And so I guess what I'm trying to ask you is 10 years, what is grief like now?
Mm-hmm.
And why decide to write a book about it? Was that part of a grieving process? Is it something you felt you needed to do? How did it come up?
Well, it came up because, well, I've written all of my life, and I was doing writing for newspapers and magazines. And on the fourth anniversary of Bethany's passing away, I felt God impressing upon me to begin to write a book. But since I've always loved history, I started writing about historical things, and I started writing historical fiction. And I thought that that's all I would ever write. In fact, people said, "Are you going to write about your daughter?" And I'd look at them and say, "Are you kidding me? Mm-hmm. I don't want to relive that."
Mm-mm.
And so I pushed that to the back of my thoughts and never entertained that idea until I went to a Christian writers conference in 2011. And during praise and worship time, I was singing and offering praise to the Lord, and I felt the strongest impression in my mind and heart that God wanted me to write the story of Bethany, and he would give me the strength to do it.
Mm.
Well, those were not words I wanted to hear, frankly. This was the book I really never wanted to write.
Right.
And yet at the same time, I knew that for some reason God wanted me to write it. And so it took me a while. I kind of stalled and, you know, put it off for a while. But finally I said, okay, God, I need to write this book. And I knew it was going to be difficult. And I asked many, many friends to pray for me mm-hmm. while I was writing it, because I knew that reliving all of this was going to be tough. But it, as God always does, he comes through for us. When he asks us to do something, he gives us the strength to do it. And it was amazing to me how easily the words flowed and how the story just unfolded. And I wrote it quicker than any book I've written before.
Mm.
And it was contracted with a publisher quicker than any book had ever been contracted before.
Almost and it was supposed to have been written.
Yeah, I guess this was supposed to be done.
Right.
So, you know, and I look at it now and I see the reaction people are giving Bethany's calendar and how it's helping other people know how to help other people. And that blesses me so much, because I see that when we go through these trials in our life, God uses them so that we can bring comfort to others. And it's very clear about that in God's word, that we're not just here to get gifts from God. We're here to recycle those gifts, as it were, and help others in similar situations. And that if I could do that through Bethany's calendar, then it's not that I rejoice that I was able to go through the pain, but I rejoice that I can help others going through it.
Where can people get a hold of your book or your other books? and find out more about you?
Sure. Well, I have a website. It's ElaineMarieCooper.com. And I'm on Facebook at Elaine Marie Cooper. You can also get all of my books on Amazon or Barnes & Noble websites. And you can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter at Elaine M. Cooper. So you can find me lots of places online and social media and come visit my website. I have lots of up-to-date information on my books.
Okay. One last chance. One message. You're in an elevator. You have from ground floor up to about floor 20, and you get to tell somebody about Bethany's calendar. What's the message that you want to make sure you convey?
Wow. I think the biggest message I want to convey is that every moment, every day of our life is an honor to serve the Lord. And Bethany used each and every moment of her life clear up to the end. She witnessed to people about God, which just even today still amazes me that she was sharing about God's love, even through her illness. And there was a recent story in the news about the young woman who moved out of state so that she could end her life because she had a terminal brain tumor, and she did not want to go through the suffering and pain of those last months. And that story just grieved my heart because I thought she is depriving others of moments with her that they will treasure forever. She kind of spoke as though there was not help to help her through the pain or any seizures she might be going through. And that just is not so, because if people are getting palliative care, which is care that doesn't prolong a life but brings comfort and pain relief during the last days of someone's life, if they're getting appropriate care through hospice, they do not have to go through terrible, terrible moments of anguish, pain, and seizures. They can be controlled through medications. And this young woman was really doing quite well. And I had to wonder, you know, did someone, you know, pressure her into saying, you know, your life is not worth remaining for however long you have? You know, it just grieved my heart that she would feel that she had to end her life. And I hope and pray that no one was encouraging her to do that early. And I hope and pray that others understand that even if we're given a terminal diagnosis, that God chooses the number of our days and the days of our own personal calendar.
Mm-hmm. And your last few days on Bethany's calendar spent with your daughter,
I would never lose those memories ever. Mm. And I treasure those moments, and I would grieve if anyone else wanted to end their life sooner than what God had decreed for that particular person.
The name of the book is Bethany's Calendar.
Yes.
Elaine Cooper, Elaine Marie Cooper.
Yes,
thank you very, very much for joining us and telling this story. It's a story no parent wants to have to tell.
No.
But I just know that God is going to use this to great ends and to bring glory to his son. So thank you very much for being with us.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, Jen.
Jen Green is part of our Northwestern Media family in Des Moines and had an opportunity to talk not too long ago with Elaine Marie Cooper about her life and experience and her daughter Bethany as well in those precious moments together. It's called Bethany's Calendar, When God Has Other Plans. And before that, we talked to Steve Seiler on Music for the Soul. You can find out more about that, musicforthesoul.org. Coming up tomorrow, just Friday before Valentine's Day, great conversation. Joe Bender is going to talk with Dr. David Clark, who is a marriage specialist and speaker, and he has written a wonderful book called Kiss Me Like You Mean It. I think, Ted, you want maybe just to
take some notes.
Sure, that's right. Sure. We'll make sure to maybe practice up with our wives tonight. We can report back tomorrow. All right.
So that sounds good.
Join Joe tomorrow for Connecting Faith. Kiss Me Like You Mean It. That's a great conversation for keeping passion going strong in your marriage and relationships. And that's coming up on Connecting Faith. If you missed part of the show, you can always check out the podcast online at myfaithradio.com.